Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to our bi-weekly broadcast of Money and Other Things Financial. This is your host, Bostonian, coming to you from the Hub in the Cradle of Liberty in Boston, Massachusetts at 11 p.m. Eastern Time on February the 7th, 2021. We had some snow today, a couple of inches. It hasn't been a bad winter at all. The temperature at airtime on this Super Bowl Sunday was 27 degrees. I'm sure it was a lot warmer down in Tampa where I just heard that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with quarterback from the New England Patriots in the past, Tom Brady has beaten the Kansas City Chiefs for a Super Bowl win. However, I can't get enthusiastic about sports as I have in the past. I think we have too many distractions, and when we see what's going on in our country, I think we have to tune out some of the distractions and focus on the things that are paramount and that are really affecting our lives. And since the election, they certainly don't look promising. The number of executive orders that have been issued by the current president is dwarfs the ones that were issued in the same time period by President Trump, Obama, and Bush. He just seems to be spending every day issuing new executive orders as if he was the king of the country. Well, our founding fathers did not create a king when they established our country over 200 years ago. So anyway, I want to welcome you all to the show and let you know that the chat room is open. And there's no one in there now, so come in and hopefully you can join with others and talk about these issues. Or you can also call the show. Let me give you the call-in number, as it's always been on our biweekly broadcast. It's 914-803-4379. So we got a lot to talk about, and I'm going to start with what I usually cover, and that is the coronavirus statistics. They are kind of boring now because they seem to be just the same old every 2 weeks. But let me give you the figures. The global figures are the infected is 106,599,041. 2 weeks ago it was 99,654,982. So it's gone up about, say, 7 million. The active cases, 25,882,814. The number of deaths globally is 2,325,171, and that's up from 2,136,090 2 weeks ago. The recovered is a large amount, 78,391,126. So don't get overstressed with them if you get indication that you have tested positive, or but you're probably, the odds are very strong that you will be you will recover from the infection. But in the USA, the number infected 27,586,894, by far the largest amount in the world, followed by only India and Brazil, with about, well, Brazil's almost at 10 million, but India's at almost 11 million total cases, but we have 27.5 million. So we, for some reason, we are by far the most infected. Maybe it's because we're the most mobile. I don't know. The active cases in the U.S. is now at 9,790,220. The number of deaths in the USA is 474,563. And that's up from 428,880. So about 50,000, or roughly 25,000 a week. And the recovered in the USA is 17,322,111. And that's up from 15 million plus. So we have a pandemic, and it's serious. The numbers that they're giving us can be questioned. We should challenge everything and satisfy ourselves that we're getting true figures from the statistical places in the country that are responsible for producing these statistics. You can check them yourself on the website at worldometers.info/coronavirus. worldometers.info/coronavirus. And now, after a long stay at 18 countries over a million, it has now gone up to 21 countries that have surpassed a million. And they, the ones that have been added are Indonesia, Czechia, and the Netherlands. And Canada is fast approaching the 1 million mark. They have 803,908. So, it looks like this is going to be a continuing thing, certainly through the winter, and we'll see the effects of the vaccine that's now being administered. Many people don't want to take the vaccine, and some reports are that the vaccine itself is a problem, and people having some bad reactions from it. But it is continuing on to be administered to those that want it. All right, so if you have any questions or you want to talk more about the coronavirus and the ongoing troubles it's causing, and don't forget the non-medical effects that it's having, on that, such as the effects it's having on our economy and on the youth of our country that are coming down with some psychological problems, or we even hear of talked about suicides among the population. So it isn't just the medical or the immediate effects of the virus from a contagious point of view, but also the related problems that it causes in the economy and in the other health issues of our country. So we need to continue to pray and start to get closer to our Creator, and there could be reasons why these things are happening that we're not aware of, because of the nature of how we've been living as a country, and how we've been abandoning many of the principles upon which our country was founded. So again, if you want to talk about the pandemic, give me a call at 914-803-4379. And if you do call in, give me your first name and what city and state you're calling from. And if you're outside the United States, give me the country and city you're calling from. So let's go on to a little more talk about the storming of the Capitol back on January the 6th. As you know, I was at that event, and I didn't see any of the activity that you're seeing on the internet. And I'm not saying it didn't happen, but I wasn't in that part of the crowd. I was in an offshoot from the main entrance to the Capitol, and I did see a storming of the Capitol where I was, but it was basically a rush to the Capitol steps, and then it seemed to just stop on the steps, and until we started to hear more stories about the other more serious parts of the area over where the main entrance to the Capitol is. But in our section, there was a big rush to the Capitol, quite a bit to the left of where I was, and I certainly was shocked by it, and we were watching it, and we were there, as you know, to give our support to the senators that were challenging the certification, the counting of the Electoral College votes, and we were concerned that this certain states, as many as 7 states, or even 8 if you count New Mexico, needed to be challenged, and they had started on the count around 1 p.m., and they had gotten to Arizona as they worked the alphabet, Alabama and Alaska, there was no challenge, but then in Arizona there was. And Ted Cruz challenged that, and as a member of the Senate, and Representative Gozar from Arizona challenged it as a representative of the House of Representatives. And so then once that happens, they break off into debates. The Senate breaks into a group to debate it for 2 hours, as does the House of Representatives. But then shortly after that, they were starting to do that, the storming of the Capitol took place, and that changed pretty much everything. And what I want to talk about now is not whether there was a storming of the Capitol. We all know that there was, but the question is, who stormed the Capitol? Why did they storm the Capitol? And the evidence seemed to be coming in that there were many, as far as the total crowd for the event, there were probably, I think the permit was originally given for 5,000 for the rally, and then it was increased to 30,000, or it was up 6 times the 5,000 to 30,000. I myself think there was much more than 30,000, but I read an article that it's very difficult to estimate a crowd once it gets above in the hundreds. But I'm looking at the various pictures that I've seen, it certainly looked like a crowd that could approach 1 million people. But you can decide for yourself how many were there. But out of the ones that were there, even if it was as low as 30,000, there were only a matter of hundreds that actually did the storming of the Capitol. I'd say probably under 500. I have read articles that they have arrested 150 that at this point, people that have violated the perimeters of the Capitol, and have done some other things. There were five people killed, including a member of the Capitol Police who was recently buried in Arlington National Cemetery. And our prayers go out to his family as this, these things should not happen in our country, and we all need to speak out about the right to protest without a peace, as President Trump said, a peaceful and patriotic protest, but not a violent one. And most, by far, most of the people who were in the nation's capital on January the 6th were there for peaceful protesting purposes, and I can vouch for the other three people that I went with from Boston that they definitely were there for that reason. Eventually did not change the outcome of the Electoral College, and I might go over that some more, but I want to first continue on with the nature of the people that went or that did storm and break into the Capitol. And it appears from some of the stories that they had pre-planned it prior to the event. There was members of groups such as the Oath Keepers, the Proud Boys, and even some people believe there were people from Antifa there. So the more and more will be coming out. But my own view is that there were people there that had planned this in advance, and maybe others were caught up with the momentum of the movement, being very disenchanted with the way they are being served by their government, and so they got caught up and joined in the event, the storming of the Capitol, and this. They should have probably had cooler heads. The president did eventually tell people that they should go home and stop the protests. But this is a sort of a spill milk situation once they have done it. But he is now due to be facing an impeachment trial in the Senate coming up. It's expected to begin on February the 9th, and then the House has already impeached him, but the trial in the Senate will begin on the 9th, this coming Tuesday, I believe, and in order to convict the president, they need 67 senators, and it looks like from the reports that we're getting now is that it's unlikely that 67 senators would vote to convict. The Democrats, if every one of them voted to convict, which would probably happen, they would still need 17 more to get to the 67 needed to convict. And in that regard, I want to read you what one senator, a Republican senator from Mississippi, has to say. Senator Roger Wicker, Republican of Mississippi, denounced the impeachment push against President Trump. And this was dated on today, actually, or updated today on One American News Network. In an interview on Sunday, Wicker blasted the upcoming impeachment trial, calling it a meaningless messaging partisan exercise. Wicker, like many GOP senators, have also questioned the constitutionality of the trial. The senator also pointed out Joe Biden could have helped unite the country by asking Democrats not to pursue impeachment. Now that they are, Wicker is making it clear that he does not believe President Trump should be convicted. The effort to remove a president who's no longer in office raises serious constitutional questions and threatens to delay national healing. And we hear all the talk from the White House how much they want to heal the partisan divide in the country, but the president has not done this, and it certainly appears to be a hypocritical position that he's saying one thing and doing another. So we'll follow that, and we'll probably have a report for you 2 weeks from tonight on our next broadcast. So if you'd like to talk more about the storming of the Capitol and what your thoughts are, we don't know the whole story. Again, I think it was some people that wanted to take that type of action, but it wasn't indicative of the large number of people that were at the rally, which was a completely a legitimate reason to be there. And it was done a bad service when this storming took place. So let me warn and say that it looks like there's a lot of banning going on now. We see now that Fox Corporation has canceled the Lou Dobbs business show, and we also noticed Twitter has suspended Gateway Pundit, a conservative organization that seems to me to produce valuable insights for the people of the country to check out and see if they find them credible. And also they've also banned Wayne Root from Twitter. So this is not good. This is not healthy. And I think many Americans are now banning Twitter, Facebook, and these other large corporations that are not being objective and fair in their platforms. And so other platforms are coming up, such as Rumble and Gab and Parler. And I think there's an old saying, if you build a better mousetrap, people will beat a path to your door. Some news about Treasury Secretary George Shultz, who was the secretary under Richard Nixon in the early 1970s, and who was the Treasury Secretary when the gold standard was abolished and we went to a complete fiat currency standard. And he has died. News came out this weekend that he died at the age of 100. He was served quite a long time in the federal government, and I believe he was also the Secretary of State under Ronald Reagan. Okay, let me give you the financial figures. The Dow Jones closed the week at 31,148.24, and that was up for the week, or since 2 weeks ago. The NASDAQ and the S&P were also up, 13,856.27 for the NASDAQ and 3,886.83. Very concerned about the overvaluation of the markets, especially with the recent job report that came out, where only 49,000 new jobs were gained in January. And the unemployment rate, although, did fall from 6.7 to 6.3. The legislation of $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief bill was passed, as the vice president, cast her first tie of what many expect to be many tie-breaking votes, since the House and since the Senate is evenly split between Democrats and Republicans at 50 each. So the vice president gets to break the tie. So let's listen to a clip, quick clip, of her first tie-breaking vote.
On this vote, the yeas are 50, the nays are 50. The Senate being equally divided, the vice president votes in the affirmative, and the concurrent resolution as amended is adopted.
Okay, so there it is. A $1.9 trillion bill has been adopted, and stimulus checks are expected to go out, I believe, by the end of February. So we should know by the time our next show is, which I'll give you in a second, whether or not that passes or not. Or whether or not the checks have gone out. Let me give you the real clear politics average of the approval of the presidency. The approval for the period between January 21st and February 4th. The approval rate is 53.8, and that's up from 2 weeks ago, and the disapproval is 36.7, and that's down. But as I said before, I believe we will see that going to the negative as the problems in the economy are very serious, and I think people are going to start to be buyer's remorse for having this change in administrations, for those that did vote for the Democrats. They will regret it as the days go forward. The jobs report, as they say, was not good for November, for January, with only 49,000 jobs created. I want to let you know that the next show will be on Blog Talk Radio on February 21st, which will get us just about two-thirds through the winter, as the spring will be coming on around March 21st. So tune in and call in and let me know your thoughts as we get more information on the goings-on of the new administration, but many of us are not optimistic about positive things happening in the future. But I want to give you a couple of places you can get in touch with and support. And one is Project Veritas. The symbol is projectveritas.com. That's James O'Keefe's website. And he is a fine reporter. And he has indicated that if you have any tips for him that you want to report and have covered, you can send him an email at veritasus@protonmail.com. veritasus@protonmail.com. But go to his website, projectveritas.com, and stay in touch with him. Also, I would invite you to stay in touch with all of the websites that are working in our behalf to get our country back to the founders' that the founder's intent for it. So that's about it, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back in 2 weeks. So stay safe. Pray continually. Use your three V's. And we'll keep you posted on the events as they transpire. God bless you all. And God bless America. Good night, everyone. Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the non-live portion of the show, 15 minutes of yours truly talking. And there are no call-ins now, so if you miss calling in and you want to call in the next time, you'll have to wait for 2 weeks. And you can make some notes and bring them up in the next broadcast, which again, it will be on February 21st, 2021. 2/21/21. That's an easy date to remember. So, it's been in the news quite a bit. Is the pillow guy, Mike Lindell, who has got quite a story, and I just found out about his past is very similar to Scott Lively's past. Where he went through a period of addiction to whether it be alcohol and or drugs. He has had a period where he went through a very difficult time, and I found a clip of Dr. Chaps talking with him, and I think you will probably get quite a bit out of it. He's also been a staunch supporter of President Trump, and he's been in the White House, and he's been at various rallies supporting the president, and we can be thankful for him. So I'm going to play that clip now, and it runs for quite a while, so we may not have too much time after it, but let's start and see where we go. Is Dr. Chapp's interview, and it took place several months ago, but it's still good for you to hear. And then I'll have a comment of a more current post that he made when we come back. Here it is.
Returned in Washington, D.C. by the CEO of MyPillow, who doesn't know Mike Lindell. Welcome to the program, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me on here.
So I'm honored to meet you in person. I've heard secretly that you are a Christian. But you love Jesus.
I put it right out there. But you might not have heard I was a former crack addict, you know.
True story. You have a book about this.
Yeah. It's called What Are the Odds from Crack Addict to CEO. One of the most amazing books you'll ever read. In fact, if you want to help out, Star Pray, if you go to about I combine with The Return and my Lindell Recovery Network, where all my proceeds of my book are going for, it's gonna help millions of addicts.
That is fascinating. So you wrote this book not to sell it like you would pillows, actually to give it away for charitable
funds. To use the money for it. You know, I self-published.
Yeah.
I pre-printed 3 million copies. That's 3 million copies.
That's a big garage you got.
And took 7 years to write, but the way it turned out, and I just felt God wanted me to, you know, use this money to, you know, it's my story, to use it for good. And it's this recovery network that's called the Lindell Recovery Network. It's the best help, I believe, ever in history for addicts.
What's the title of the book, and where can we buy a copy?
It's called What Are the Odds? From Crack Addict to CEO. And you can get a copy. You can go right to MyPillow.com and get one right there if you want. Save $10. Use promo code M.
Promo code M. So bring me through the short version of the story. How did you go from crack addict
to
CEO?
Well, my parents divorced when I was 7, and I go back to that. I was put into a school where I was the only kid from a divorced family, so I didn't feel, I could fit in. I felt different than everyone. I mean, and this stuff manifests, I think, a lot of people, fatherlessness in this country. I believe addiction stems from childhood and trauma and things that happen that you don't even realize. And then you end up using drugs, alcohol, or addictions to mask pain, to false courage. I mean,
wow. Fear
of rejection. I'm a person, I couldn't talk to people. If I wasn't high or I wouldn't be able to talk.
Yeah.
So I would be very, and I look back now and it was fear of rejection. So it was like, you don't get rejected if you don't talk. It's a very simple concept. You don't, people that feel unworthy, and that's the devil's lies that get in there. All these lies. And
the spirit of fear.
The spirit of fear, right. Well, here, I was a very functioning addict. I think what happens is people perceive addicts as homeless in the street. That's the least of them. It doesn't matter how many forks you eat with. Addiction affects everyone, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, I was a functioning addict until about the year 2000. And I switched from cocaine and alcohol and compulsive gambling to crack cocaine. So then in crack cocaine, it was like, we didn't make jokes about heroin. Like, what are you on heroin? No, it was, what are you on, crack?
So it's stronger.
Yeah, it's invented my pillow in 2004, so I was I had these parallel paths going of addiction and I lost a 20-year marriage. I had all these things happen. But one of the things in 2008, even the drug dealers, I was up for 14 days. They did an intervention. And I come out of the room in Minneapolis there, by the way, where all the stuff got, burned out.
Yeah.
These were my friends, lost their businesses for years. What a shame. And anyway, I come out of the room, and all three of the drug dealers are there, the biggest dealers in the cities. And I go, what are you guys doing? He goes, you've been up for 14 days. We're cutting you off. I go, what is this, an intervention? They go, oh, whatever you want, Mike. Now, they went to...
They were your drug dealers.
Drug dealers.
Standing to make a profit from selling you crack, but they refused to because you were over the limit.
Right. And here's what happened. There's a reason they said that. Now, one of them left in disgust. The other one went down to the streets, got the word out. I didn't know it at the time. The other one sat with me like my mother babysitting, looking over and how much you got left, and he's watching me. He finally went to sleep, and I snuck down in the streets of Minneapolis. I couldn't buy crack anywhere. I came upstairs at 3 in the morning, and he goes, how'd that work out for you? He goes, man, this is what he said. He goes, man, you've been telling us for years that this MyPillow thing is just a platform for God, and you're going to come back someday and help us all out of this addiction lifestyle we're living. Because I would tell him that all the time. I prophesized that I would, you guys, I'm going to quit someday, and I see it. I'm going to evangelize, and I'm going to be an evangelist and bringing people out of addiction. Well, now, two of those guys are born again Christians.
Yeah.
And by the way, I got saved on February 18, 2017. So all the years you see me wearing my cross, I wanted to be that guy.
Yeah.
Just like I would always tell them, God was chasing me, but I always wanted to be that guy.
How did you get saved? What was the moment of personal salvation for you?
It was a build-up. I look at things in my book. It's what it, when you look at things in your own life, it's a one in a million, one in a billion, or could never happen. You add them together. When does it become a miracle? I use mathematical odds. I have my whole life going, this couldn't happen. This has to be God, right?
Yeah.
But then, and I had 14 near-death experiences, so, I mean, I should have known a long time ago Jesus is real. God's real. Well, what happened then in 2015, things started happening that don't happen to normal people. I had a dream I'd be in the same room as Donald Trump. I go, why would I want to meet Donald Trump? A month later, he runs for president. Now, I realized I knew nothing about politics. I was into crack my whole life. I didn't know a Republican from a Democrat. Well, things started happening. Ben Carson, I went to the National Prayer Breakfast. I'm still not saved, but I went there, and I was picked out of 12 people to pray in a room with Ben Carson when he was still running for president. And I'm in that room, and this prophet guy says, a couple of you in this room are praying. And I'm going, I'm not knowing what I'm doing. He goes, a couple of you in this room are going to change the world. They're going to become great friends and change the world. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, I think one of them might be me, but who's the together when Mo, Ben, and I are best friends, though. So, I mean, it was like prophesied. Yeah. But these things kept happening, and then that meeting with Donald Trump did happen. He reached out to me and said, Mike, will you meet me in Trump Tower? These things kept happening. I'm going, God has to be real. This is impossible.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, even my friends, they see on TV, I'm sitting with the President of the United States on it, and they go, my friends go, Jesus is real. There's no way that this crack addict is sitting next to the president.
Okay.
But this built up to me going to this retreat. Now, I had good seeds all my life planted. But I went to, it's called Operation Restore Warrior. And it was for veterans, actually. It's like it's like a drop zone. But I went in there with hope. You know, and my gal, I went, she goes, you believe in God, but you don't have a personal relationship with Jesus. And I went in there with hope. And on the second day, February 18, 2017, I got on my knees and surrendered. And it was the most peaceful thing ever, where all that went off of me, I'm going, I don't have to worry anymore about, you know, this. And now I can go out and speak out for Jesus like I did a pillow.
And Jesus came into your heart that day.
Yeah, 100%. Restored my heart. It was gone. All the stuff I haven't forgiven myself for, I was forgiven for. That was really key. There were things in my past I couldn't forgive myself for. I thought, oh, yeah, I wrote, you know, it's in my book. You know, I can read well. I'll leave something to the imagination for the book.
I love that. So now you're sort of involved in politics, but I sense your real heart is the gospel.
Here's where it's at. Right now, before this pandemic, I was last fall. I was with a guy, and he's sitting there, and we're both. He's 80 years old, and he goes, Mike. He said, I just met him. He goes, you know, Mike, people don't look to God. And he's a born-again Christian, and he said, people don't look to God unless bad things are going in their life, like the Great Depression. And I looked at him, and I said, no, I said, the Great Depression, they had God, but they were praying for physical things like food and shelter. I said, we have an opportunity of a lifetime here. We have addiction. It's everywhere. It's an opportunity for the biggest revival in history. My platform called the Lindell Recovery Network is not – It's the goal is not just to get people off of drugs, alcohol, overeating, whatever it is. That's just a bonus, is to get people to Jesus.
Yes.
That's the calling.
Yes.
That's my calling. My platform is used for, you know, when my drug dealers back in the day said, you know, I tell them I'm going to have this great platform to bring, you know, to help people in addiction, but I didn't know that the help was Jesus.
Right.
Amen.
And now you know, and now they're coming to Christ in record numbers.
Yeah.
You're also,
but everyone's looking for hope.
Yeah.
Everybody's looking for hope now. Now you throw in a pandemic, you stir it up, everybody's looking for hope.
Somebody out there is watching.
Jesus.
Somebody out there is watching. They haven't read your book yet. They know where to find it. But would you minister to them and maybe say a word of prayer?
Yeah, here's what you need to know. I'm going to say this first. Everyone out there, we all know people that have died from drugs and, you know, all these, and that these horrible things going on with our children dying, ODing. But we also know people that have made it through, you know, people like myself. But if you're an addict out there and you have someone your own age, maybe does the same drug, but you know he made it through, go find out how he made it. You're going to find out he made it through Jesus, because that's what works. And my prayer is, I just pray that everyone can realize there is hope out there, and that God just fill their hearts up, fill those wounds, and replace them, restore their hearts. Replace them with you, Lord. Come into anyone out there that feels they're unworthy or feel they're not good enough or feel rejected, have a fear of rejection. Take away all those fears and fill it up with God. Fill it up, Lord. We ask you to just come into everyone's heart out there, restore them, and we ask all of this in Jesus' name.
Amen. My guess is...
Well, that is a great message, inspiring message about people that have addicted and how they can turn their lives around. So thanks for Mike Lindell's story. And I also want to let you know that he has produced a video about the election fraud that he believes needs to be told. And you can find that on a website known as the Sons of Liberty. Sons, let me see if I can get that right for you. SonsOfLibertyMedia.com. And look for the website on the... There's a bunch of good things on there. So look for the website about how he has explained the problems with the election. So that's about it, ladies and gentlemen, for another two-week show. We will be with you on 2/21/21. So with that, I'll say good night. God bless you all. And God, well, let me play the closing song that this tonight I'm going to play from Diana Ploss's last show. Yesterday, she ended her show with this, so I'll end my show with the same song. Here we go. God bless you. Good night, everyone.
God.
Whoops, I guess that won't play, so I'll have to fall back on my regular. Closing song. If I can find that. Oh, here we go. Good night, everyone.